everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week, we have the very specialist of guests, one Daniel Bergstrom. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Jay. How are you?
I am well. How are you doing?
All fine. It's midwinter here, so I'm trying to spend as much time playing War Machine at War Room as I can, so good timing.
How cold does it get in general where you live?
This time of year, about minus 20 degrees Celsius. Let's see what that may be in Fahrenheit.
Is that the low in overnight, I assume?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there are spikes down to minus 30, so that would be about, around minus 4, minus 5 Celsius Fahrenheit.
Oh, okay.
So that kind of is not too bad.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
There's not Russian numbers. We have the kind of but it's off the climate than they do.
Yeah. I live in Idaho, and this actually hasn't been it's been a fairly mild winter. I've only used the snowblower, I think, once or twice this year. And there's also some years where it just gets like really, really cold to the point where sometimes we'll have snow days where the school gets canceled because there's too much snow. But we've had some days in previous years where basically it's school gets canceled because it's too cold outside and the diesels will gel up and the kids can't go outside to go in between and stuff. So it's been nice that it's been, a fairly mild winter for us. And fairly mild is, the lulls will be fairly close to what you're talking about right now. So
yeah. If it's not obvious to people, I'm located in very up north Sweden, so about a 2-hour flight north of Stockholm. So it's pretty far.
So yeah, Daniel, for those who haven't heard you on a previous podcast, why don't you go ahead and give a little bit of information about yourself?
Sure. I am now on my fifth year of playing War Machine. Started out when MK3 dropped. Summer of 16. Before then, I played maybe 15 years of Warhammer, kind of competitively. And I guess that's what drew me into War Machine, because promises of a very tight and very kind of competitive-friendly rule set. And I had a great gaming group that was kind enough to kind of let me jump in deep with the feet first and just grind enough games until I kind of knew what I had at least a sense of what I was doing. So it was a rough start. It was a kind of steep learning curve, but I'm amazed kind of that after 5 years of playing quite a lot of War Machine, I still think that I have lots of things to discover, and that the rules are still kind of, they're clear and they are deep, and I still enjoy kind of looking through War Room, trying to find new subtle combinations that I haven't seen before and stuff like that. So I'm very hyped about War Machine. I'm really looking forward to coming back to the tournament scene. I'm traveling Europe mostly for some tournaments. I have played Signar for 5 years, exclusively apart from a short 3-game streak with Infernals, and then I played Sloan. So that's me. I kind of enjoy trying to play something to the extent that I feel that I can kind of foresee what will happen in most matchups I come to. Others have other kind of, I guess, approaches to the game and like to experiment and being all sides of all kind of combinations. But for me, I'm pretty happy just grinding enough games to kind of give me a sense of my own tools and then to try to optimize that for my opponents.
Awesome. You're also one of the people that's pretty active in the Discord group for the meta. So thank you for that as well.
Yeah, no worries. I always enjoy hearing people's thoughts and kind of the one thing that happened during now the years of the pandemic is that obviously we've all come, a lot of us people have come online, started playing with each other across the country and continental boundaries that we normally didn't maybe cross as often that we have. So I mean a kind of a large portion of my games during 2020 has been versus opponents in the US, in Australia, and I think it's kind of the exchange that we are doing is, it's kind of fascinating how it kind of conjoins the metas that were a lot more separated in the past. And so obviously the meta is one great channel where people from very different metas and very different experiences can come and chime in and share their experiences.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that's one of the, obviously one of the positive, side effects that we can try to pull out of the pandemic. So I guess let's go ahead and I'll give a breakdown a little bit of, what we'll be doing. So, we'll talk to each other for about 45, 50 minutes, and that'll be the main episode. And then we'll have a bonus episode that people who are subscribers to the Patreon can go ahead and, listen to that as well. So let's dive in, and we'll have, questions from the patrons to start out, which you've already seen and are prepped for at this point.
I wish I had a bit of a busy day, but I have it, looked through them at least, so I have some notion of what we will be talking about.
Okay. So first question from Zach Witten. He says, why are gun mages the coolest thing in the whole damn game, but also somehow completely useless? Does Privateer Press hate money?
Yeah, I actually agree with Zach. I so wish they were kind of more easy to reach for the entire Sons of the Tempest. But I heard a lot of people talk about how kind of dominating they were back in Mark II. Mm. And maybe the pendulum has swung a bit back to... I think there may be kind of the kind of unit that's really, really hard to balance, because either they're oppressive from range and they just take all your stuff away before you can engage them, or the way they feel a bit now is they don't do enough work at range, and then people can just get them close and personal, and then they don't really last for long. So I guess that's where they're at. That they had their glory days, and now people need the rest from them. But maybe next iteration they will be amazing again.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed my unit of them in that I would put in with Haley 2 in Mark 2, and most people don't want to say that their own stuff is broken, but I didn't really feel like they were oppressive, at least.
It is kind of
sad. I had a someone who came to Gameopolis and got into the game, and he bought his stuff based on what he thought looked cool.
Yeah.
And so he bought like a bunch of gun mages and stuff like that, and he would come to game night and like just get rickrolled. Yeah. And eventually stop coming. And that's it's kind of a sad trajectory. So
it is. And to be honest, I mean, we will talk about Gunlights later, but it is really hard to kind of give both players a fighting chance. Either the gunline is too good, or it's kind of not there where you needed to shave off everything that comes running at you. And finding that sweet spot must be really, really hard.
Yeah. Okay, so next question from Zach. He says, I want to play Kray and not have people make comments like, well, at least he's a cool-looking model. Is there a list / build that will help me live my dreams?
No. I'm sorry. I'm aware of. I mean, I know people, especially Gibbs, I think beforehand, ran the kind of four Centurion build, like maybe 2 years ago, and some supporting gun mages. But I think that the scenario package is too fast for Kray right now. So he would love to have an army with a kind of guerrilla hit-and-run style warjacks, because all of his stuff just applies to warjacks pretty much. And if you do with this scenario pack, I think you will just be overwhelmed on scenario. I don't think you can keep up. I did have a look at Kray trying to find a good build into Infernals, just because kind of the bricked-up Tormentor build, the idea was that maybe they can just go in and trade for a heavy and then repo back and kind of force him to come out of his shell. But I found that our jacks aren't really reliable enough to trade versus an opposing kind of warjack style model without having some buffs. I mean, some free charges during defeat obviously helps, but ideally they would need some kind of mat and damage fixer as well. And sadly, he cannot give them both right now. But maybe if the Snorri packet of 2021 is A, released, and B, is a bit slower, a bit more kind to the kind of long-term shaving off models playstyle, then I don't see him being that far behind the other casters.
I guess, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I've always kind of had the impression with some of the recent incarnations of Kray that he might struggle to be like a top caster that you would want to take to a big convention, but he is someone that you could take to like a local game night or a local tournament and have perform well, potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. He was kind of good in Champions the other year when he was one of those casters you can have there. But I think his problem is that we as a faction don't really have good melee warjacks.
Right.
So that one of the lures with playing in Flames of the Darkness is obviously having access to all the mercenary, very good melee warjacks. And without them, I'm not sure he can kind of be in his optimal environment. And I guess that's one of the things that we kind of shouldn't have as a faction. I mean, we need to be bad at something, right? And having melee warjacks is one of those things that we're not simply not good at it. And then his entire kit is geared towards running those warjacks. So
right.
If we would have something like the Negator or something like that, I think he could be very, very well, a very potent caster. But I agree, he's very fun to play. I love the model. I actually took mine and converted it into Strikers 3. So at least I can play with the model.
All right, so Zach's next question. After the embarrassing plastic models in the Mark III two-player box, did Privateer Press just decide it was best to just forget the Stormguard exist?
Yeah, we will see about what happens in the dynamic update once that arrives. But I have high hopes that they will be revived. Because as he points out, I mean, a lot of people have them. They were also, if I don't misremember, in the previous army box. The one with Siege, some gun mages, and a unit of Stormguard, if I don't misremember. And so a lot of people seem to be sitting on these models. It would be great if they at least have a kind of fighting chance on the table. But having a 12-15 stat line with 16 points for 10 models simply hasn't aged that well in MK3.
Yeah, I mean, the last time I remember Stormguard being good was in Mark 1.
Yeah, you outdate me with about two editions then.
There was a bunch of jank that they could do, but they, you know, they just kind of have victim stats and a pretty high price tag, and that's not super appealing. But that leads us into his next question. He says, "Oh no, you remember Stormguard exists. How would you help Privateer Press fix them?"
This is kind of tricky because I mean, there seems to be an abundance of having Tough Vengeance kind of as the sweeping change to making infantry viable. And I kind of like it in a way because it gives you that feeling of kind of their slow and purposeful coming across the table. And when you actually start committing into them, you need to make sure you can take off enough of them off so you don't die to the kind of counter punch with Vengeance and Threat Rangers and stuff like that. It would be a bit boring to see that on the Storm Guard because we already have that in Flames, obviously, on the fighting units. So maybe if we would kind of gear Storm Division to be a bit more defensive, having something like set defense, it's not good enough for them, but I was wishing for maybe a bit more of a synergy with something else. I know the Legion players have been very happy with how the Legionaries turned out. They get better armor when they're injured. They have Unyielding, I think. They have access to armor buffs with the Blight Archon. And all that stuff can add up pretty quickly. So, yeah. I mean, at least make them good at something. It's not that important what it is. You can make them dirt cheap as well, looking at maybe the Halberdiers from Mercs. If you can get all 10 of them for 13 points, then they would have a different niche compared to what our other models do. But I think separating also Stormguard from the Silverline Stormguard is a very daunting kind of design aspect.
Right.
In a way, I just hope they would just merge them into one, to be honest. But I know that's not how they usually have been going around things. Definitely fix the UA, because the rules with the unit leader and how they get their shots off is really clunky and really weird.
All right, so Zach's next question. He says, my friend brought a blockhouse. What should he do with it besides use it to prop open his door? Are there any secrets to be unlocked? So real quick, excuse me, I'm guessing that a lot of listeners may not even be super familiar with the blockhouse. So can you remind people what it is, what it does, and maybe give any suggestions on how to unlock this hidden piece?
Yes. So it's a structure. It's 10 points. It used to be 14, but they lowered it by 4. It can give you 2 trenches. You deploy it advanced, so you can put it, I think it's up 8 inches from your deployment zone. And it's just barely enough, so it can't actually interact with any of the scenario zones apart from spread the net, which is a bit sad. Also, buildings, structures cannot score square zones, which is rectangle zones, which is also a bit sad. And it's an oversight that many do. Because you would kind of assume them to be either like a battle engine or like a war jack, but they can't actually score those zones. It has those 2 trenches. You need to place them base to base with either the model or with another trench. So you can actually make a kind of small snake of 2 trenches. It provides girded. If you're base to base to the blockhouse, you make it girded. It can return D3 trencher models to play like a reinforcement. So you get them back with 1 wound and they can't do their combat action when they get back. It also have a AoE 4 power 15, range 15 knockdown gun. That's high explosive. But it cannot boost in any way. It is rat 6 up to 7 if you did bring veteran leader. And that is part of its problem. I think we may suffer a bit from being the first structure to be designed and released with the blockhouse. They have since, I think, given all of them an opportunity to at least boost their shots and even damage rolls. And then there are different mechanics for different structures, obviously. But as far as I can remember, all of them have at least like a soul mechanic or a damage mechanic to provide some boosts. And I think that this is something they picked up after seeing maybe how the blockhouse performs on the table. It's not all bad. It's just that you usually have enough support in your lists. So finding another 10 points for the D3 recursion and some trenches is usually kind of hard. I have had luck with it playing Striker 2 in Gravediggers because the trenches help him get there. So you can position the trenches kind of offensively, and you can make sure that you have an ideal spot for Striker to cover basically almost into their kill box. If he wants to go out and try to swing his big stick and kill the caster. So that's where I had most of actually success with the blockhouse, with Striker 2 in Gravediggers. I think, although the problem may be a bit bigger than that currently, because the Gravediggers team is slightly out of favor. Maybe Carly, the new UA for the Express teams, can help alleviate that just a little bit. But I think she is just barely released, and I only had to play like 1 or 2 games so far. So the jury is still out a bit, but in general, the trenchers haven't really aged that well either because of the abundance of shield guards, and their kind of PS9 chargers aren't really up there with the numbers that we are getting spoiled with from other themes. So unfortunately, I think the first kind of swing that needs to happen is that the Gravediggers needs to come back into the kind of consideration for most people, and then we can start to think about if we could also get a blockhouse in there.
So this is my next question for you. This is one of my own, and it's kind of completely unrelated other than the name. So when I go through and I am doing like my reorders, and there's 2 models for Signar that I keep getting mixed up when I have to reorder them. Just because their names are kind of similar, but there's the blockhouse and the brick house. And the brick house is the character warjack that has like kind of an astonishingly bad pose of, I think that you can mod it to look better, but like the studio pose and sculpt, I think is just really quite bad. But I guess the brick house, I don't think has made any waves anywhere ever. Have you tried playing that model? And I, for people who are unfamiliar with it, what can you tell them about it?
I mean, it's not bad on paper. It's 18 points. It's a speed 4 reach 2 Warjack, and it's Maddox's character Warjack. So it has kind of the same chassis as the Centurion and the Avenger. And I think, actually, speaking about mixes, isn't it featured on that box by mistake, I think? If you look at the plastic Centurion kit box, I think they accidentally put Brick House. That's one of the options, but it's not maybe in the box. Yeah, I think so. The kind of the selling point with Brick House is that it has a Magnafist 2-inch. So if you are within 2-inch of that model, you cannot move away except to change facing. So we can, there was some theories early on about being able to kind of play Halley 2 with him. This was, it was released prior to themes being really dominant. And then maybe you could just TK stuff into his reach. You can run him in. You can put Arcane Shield on him and kind of lock some important models into place. I'm not sure he is tanky enough in this meta to actually survive just like a single heavy turning around and smacking him in the face. But if you can find that kind of optimal distance of engaging a 1-inch reach model from exactly like 1.1 to 1.9 or 2 away, so you could keep him in check and he cannot strike you back. So that there is some kind of theoretical ideal situation where you can indefinitely just hold people off and engage a lot of them. But in practice, it's hard to find the 18 points for something that's probably pretty theoretical that it will ever happen. So. But Maddox got her update recently. She gained resourceful. She gained a better gun. And so maybe the bond is just retaliatory strike. So I'm not sure it is good enough even to warrant with the Maddox change, rather than taking something like a Stormclad as more self-sufficient in terms of focus. But it's something I agree. The pose also, there was a lot of kind of stop sign memes when it was released. People were photoshopping stop signs onto the model. It kind of looks like he holds his hammer up like a sign.
Yeah, yeah, he does.
I've seen some very nice remodeling of that model where it's has a more of a dynamic pose. So as a completionist, I'm actually, I have that model lying around somewhere. I haven't painted it yet. So, but he's a bit expensive for 18. For the things he does, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay.
He has a carapace, maybe we should mention that. So he's pretty tanky against guns.
All right. Final question from Zach. He says, why is P3 blue the best damn blue in all of miniature paints?
Maybe I shouldn't mention this, but my Signar are painted in Trollhide base.
Oh, my Signar heavens.
Yeah. So they have a bit of a kind of muted greenish tinted blue, rather than the in your face, more marine kind of blue. So I will have to take his word for it. I don't actually own that paint, I must admit.
All right. Well, the next question, this is from Hybrid Monkey D. He says, where on a tier list would you place Signar? To which features or flaws would you attribute that placement?
I think the top factions right now are Menoth, Mercs, and Convergence on the back of Strange Bedfellows. Minions is up there as well. And what else? Infernals, I guess, is a bit unknown, but they used to be one of the reasons that I would rank Signar slightly lower in the brackets. So, but let's say we have got about 15 factions. Signar is probably around place 5-6. Somewhere, along with factions like Kador, Rhett is still a bit out because the CID hasn't dropped yet, right? So I would place it somewhere there. I mean, kind of the upper middle class of the factions. The attributes, Because we have some strong lists. We have a handful of casters that are really, really good. I think the kind of Signa community has started to come together a bit about kind of how to build Flames lists also, and what models are generally most useful in those. So Flames and Darkness is still really strong. People used to be very, very well teched for Flames, where Fiona was at the height of her power level during the fall. I think that she seems to have been almost falling off the face of the earth, and I think that opens up for us to play more of Flames without kind of being caught in the crossfire of people teching for Fiona, and that's obviously very good.
Yeah.
I also think that we are well placed to play into the factions that are now kind of seeing their resurgence in terms of Legion, Trolls, Rhett to some extent. So I think we are a solid upper part of middle, and I don't see that changing very in kind of in the near future either, because of things coming out. I think our main problem is that we in terms of kind of really competitive high level stuff, we only have a handful of casters, maybe 5 or 6 that I would seriously consider for a tournament. And let's say we have 2, maybe 3 theme forces. So kind of finding a large variation within the faction can be pretty difficult.
So I've got a bunch of follow-up questions on this. I guess first off, what would you say are the 5 or 6 casters that are the most competitively viable right now?
So Striker 1, Striker 2, Siege 1, Haley 2, Haley 3. That's the short list. You can make an argument for maybe, and I don't know. I mean, the rest of them are trailing a bit behind, like Nemo 3, Sloan, Striker 3, maybe New Maddox, but I haven't actually seen anyone being very successful with her yet. So that would say that's the shortlist. Haley 2, ideally play her in Heavy Metal or maybe Storm Division, maybe Storm Division. Obviously, she can't go in Flames. And the Strikers 1 and 2, they most probably go in Flames. Haley 3 has had some success with Richard Owens from the East Coast US meta, has done really well with her in Heavy Metal, kind of making a defensive skew with the Morrowind Archons and the new goodies that you can get in the Heavy Metal nowadays. And Siege plays really well in Heavy Metal, and he is a bit of an outlier when it comes to meta. So if you have a meta that isn't really prepared for having a strong gunline caster, as we discussed with the gun mages before, he can be pretty oppressive on the table. But other than that, I think the step down to the next kind of tier, then you need to have a very specific plan why you would bring something like Striker 3 or Sloan or Nemo 3 over the 5 we already discussed a bit. You need to have a very specific matchup in mind. I did experiment a lot with trying to find a very good answer into Infernals, and while doing that, I did play a lot of Striker 3 in Flames, because his feat means auto-hitting, which then totally negates, at least partially negates, Satyros' feats. He also packs enough of a punch then to actually kind of trade very, very well into Tormentors, and that is a pretty decent build. It's still very reliable on terrain, and you can, if the Infernals player has enough terrain to kind of hide behind, the council still falls apart a bit. But that's a kind of an example when you will actually reach for the next set of casters that aren't kind of bad by themselves, but they seem to be lacking 1 or 2 pieces for them to be really a good generalist.
So next follow-up question, you said that there were roughly about 2 or 3 themes that you kind of rely upon. Which ones would those be?
So for anything kind of melee focused, you would reach for Flames first. And if you have a very specific reason why you would go into Storm Division instead, then that may be an option. But I would expect that this is more kind of, at least somewhat related to the inertia of adopting your model collection into playing Flames, rather than there being a very strong lure with playing in Storm Division. And for kind of a more ranged or mixed arms list, Heavy Metal is the obvious choice, because that's the most permissive theme in terms of what models you can include. You can include all Partisan Signar solos as without spending your merc slots. So you can actually get the Morrowind Archons, and you can get Throne, and you can get Glynn, all the new goodies you can have in heavy metal, and you can have that with casters that can't go into flames. So I would expect most pairings to either be a double flames list or a flames heavy metal list, one of each. And then for the rare occasion, you'd go into Storm Division if you have a very specific matchup in mind. You could run something like Haley 3 in Storm Division. I tried to do that for the for one of the team tournaments that was run recently before Christmas. And that was actually also pretty much a Infernals drop. I think that would be working even better now when they have their mat reduced from 7 to 6 on the Tormentors. And then having defense 15 Storm Lances can be really obnoxious for the Infernals players to deal with. As soon as it starts to kind of trying to hit your counter charges on nines, if you trigger those, or I mean, you need to boost the attack rolls versus your lances, you can have a very good game, and then you can't revive them because you would snack them, obviously. But at least that you have a despell in Haley 3, which is one of the few places in faction that we can remove enemy upkeeps without spending our merc slot on Ailish. So versus like Zathros specifically, Haley 3 in Storm Division made a lot of sense. Because she can dispel rebuke, she could give them ghost walk, and she could make them really hard to hit with, which is one of the things that Infernals aren't actually that great at hitting high defense.
Okay, so I guess my next question is for, and I guess we might talk about this in some of the later questions as well, but one of the, I guess, kind of common archetypes that Signar historically has done has been kind of range focused or gun lines. How well do you feel Signar does with that currently?
I think we still do pretty well, actually. You would think that having a kind of surge in shield guards, both from Flames in the Darkness and Siretlige, I guess from Convergence, even though they don't run it that much anymore in Destruction Initiative, but also from Manoth with their them commonly bringing 3x3 initiates for 9 shield guards. But the thing is, at least I've been playing a lot of Siege 1. It's my go-to list. And I found that even if you have a high number of shield guards on the other side, you can usually pick them up from enough range in one turn to kind of save your feet and your main damage dealing for the other turn. And obviously having Triumph, he got his update, I think it was part of the Gravedigger CID, so something like 3 years ago now, but still, he helps with those kind of things. So I'm sniping off key models like the first initiate in the unit, and then you can have some lesser shots like maybe a Thamarat Archon or something else picking off the other two and kind of thinning out the herd of the shield guards before you actually need to do enough damage. I have been playing with Kane 3 recently, trying deliberately to play stuff other than Siege. He doesn't have the same kind of tools the Siege does, unfortunately. I mean, if you run into something like Manoth and they put Passage, I think, on their jacks, so you can't shoot them with non-magical guns, he's kind of stoked. And unfortunately, the same goes for Sloane. I think Sloane has the highest damage output, in theory. I mean, if you get to actually get value from all your hunter shots and boost them and find the kind of the optimal opposition for that list. But I find that both Kane and Sloane are a bit easily deceived by, like, Menoth Passage or Shield Guards or something else, like... Yes, all witches' range reduction isn't that great either, or Krieger's ability to put up Windstorm. So I still think we have a pretty good gun line. I don't think you would reach for many other casters but Siege 1, though, because he has Explosivo, so you can give anything you need to be magical. You can just put up a spell, including your battle engines. Both Nemo and Strider have non-magical guns, unfortunately. The objective still only gives one attack of magical if you would pick the magic weapon objective, and I hope this is something that would change for the next steamroller, making all attacks magical. Siege also has mage sight, so you can play around things like forests, which the other casters, Kane also has it, but he normally can't get it up because then he dies. And then you have the Kane Zero and Ground Hunter interaction, which means that you can get a fully boosted AoE for Power 14 under the whole template. Fully boosted everything without spending any focus on your caster. So you essentially can be camping 5 from 14 inches away and still get a lot of work from your caster. And we talked about this briefly already before that finally this kind of the balance between having a gun line that can shoot hard enough so people can't get to you, and kind of not making the cut and being overrun is very tricky. And I feel that at least if you're kind of trying to break as many rules of the game as possible, you try to avoid things that need to target stuff. For example, you have some trick shots, you have some electro leaps, you have ground pounder itself, you have maybe Harlem Hold'em High that can have the ghost shot and stand behind a building and shoot without having line of sight. All those things kind of adds up in a way. And if you can shave off enough important things and use something like Alexia 1 to score or contest scenario really easily, then I think we can have a very potent gun line. But I know also, obviously, it's not the preferred kind of play style for many people. People think it's maybe they want to make sure that their opponent doesn't feel that this is a negative play experience. So I think maybe you would need to play gunline stylish lists into a meta that kind of is aware and kind of prepared for it in a sense. If people show up at game night and you bring a strong enough gunline to be competitive, then anyone who hasn't really prepared for it, either mentally or in teching, probably could have a bit of a less fun experience. Because, it forces your opponent to play a bit differently than it would normally do. Normally, kind of the standard way to play into heavy gunline is just to run everything forward, spread it out and run, and hope that the guns won't do enough so you can actually get there. But as soon as you start second guessing, then you start to leave some models behind. Maybe you try to focus on one part of the board or something like that. Then you would see just your front half of your army being picked off. And then you would be back at the same spot you were one turn ago, but with half of your army left. So I think it's something that if you are playing people with the same expectations that you have and maybe at the same similar skill level, I don't necessarily think the gun lines is something bad for the game. But it's one of those things that can snowball very fast if you play into someone who's not really playing optimally into your gun line, and you can kind of take advantage of that and then can turn one side very fast. So I wouldn't recommend it for game night, but if you feel so inclined, we definitely can do it in faction.
All right. So our next question from Hybrid Monkey D. He says, do you have any hopes or expectations for the Storm Division update?
My one expectation that I feel is not kind of wishlisting too much is to have in-faction Pathfinder. I mean, it's so easy to look at all the tools other factions have and all the tools we have in other themes and kind of start incorporating those into like Storm Division, asking for vengeance, asking for things like better theme force benefits or whatever. But I think the difficulty for them to design Storm Division is to make it different enough from Flames. So they are doing essentially different things for different purposes. But the one thing I think that you can actually expect from having a melee-focused kind of list is to have Pathfinder. Because right now, as soon as you build a Storm Division list, your only option is if you would include Throne or Rupert for Pathfinder as a merc. And it turns really boring pretty fast, because then you are excluding all the tinkering and tweaking and planning that you could do by including a different merc solo. Your ability to tech for something like Rebuke by including Ailish is just simply not there, because you need Pathfinder. And I think that simple change would open up a lot of options, maybe making models like Lanissa or Ailish or some of the other kind of not very common merc solos. Maybe they would put them back on the table again. My other hope expectation is that they would, when they do the changes, I hope they will bring out different strengths rather than just the Storm Lances. They are still good enough. And there is obviously a kind of a risk that if you start doing bonuses to all Storm Knights, then probably the Storm Lances will also benefit. And I hope they will find a way to diversify the theme force a bit more.
All right, so the next question from Hybrid Monkey D, he says, what is your favorite gunline caster? That's based on what you've said and our chatting in the past, that's obviously going to be Siege 1, I assume.
Yes, definitely.
And I guess what's sort of been your history with that caster? How did you start playing him?
I played a gentleman called Julian Lesage in Germany at a team event, and he was really hyped about Siege and tried to convince me and Robin, or one of our other Swedish players who tried quite a bit, to play that list. And I think this was a few months before Kane Zero was released. And then as soon as that came out, his Kane Zero's rules started to kind of finalize. And then Julian's enthusiasm obviously didn't go down from there when we realized what he could do for Siege with his Ground Pounder attack. So we picked it up. I think this was the summer of 18. If I don't misremember, we kind of scrambled to get that model in time for the WTC in 2018. But then Robin actually claimed that because we were in the same team. So we brought two Signar pairs, and I had to play Nemo 3 instead of Siege because Siege was taken. And he did play Siege with Gun Mages. So at least in 2018, that was a pretty good list. There were a lot of trolls at the time. Kolgrima were at her height, so having something that would shred kind of feated on trolls was obviously very useful. But I kind of gleaned at how well both Julian and Robin were doing with Siege at that time. I started playing him then maybe the fall of 2018, so almost 2 years ago. And I have been pretty much playing him since. I think we've been at least having the notion of that we had a meta that wasn't very good for gunlines for quite some time. So it's been very common for me to show up at an event where people wouldn't kind of tech or prepare for a gunline, and then just have people being blindsided by that kind of list being dropped into them, like the first round of the tournament. So I think the popularity of the kind of the trend of having a bit more guns, obviously it's growing now with the Legion coming out, the Archangel being really good, the Retribution CID probably will make that even more viable. So let's see if we can still have the luxury of being one of the only very strong gun lines. I think we may have to kind of rethink, or at least reconsider, if people will be prepared enough for a gun line coming the next 6 months or so, or if we can still keep blindsiding people with that kind of list.
All right, so last question in this episode. This one's also from Hybrid Monkey D. He says, if Privateer Press let you decide which Warcaster next got a new epic form, which would you choose?
An epic, I suppose. Is that epic as in two, like in the old epic forms? Or
Let's just say any additional number beyond one. So you could pick Striker 4 if you wanted to.
Yeah, they had that chance, obviously, with the kind of Archon guy, but that's a very good question. I would probably... I mean, it's the problem with, I think, the entire kind of set of Nemo casters and Kane casters is that they are kind of doing the similar thing, and it's not really working out for them. So adding, like, another Kane 4 that's still kind of a shooty gun mage and has some minor support, I'm not sure that would change anything unless he is kind of radically stronger than all of the other Canes that are not being played right now. But maybe I will do a curveball and I would promote someone like Strange Ways. Yeah, we will do Strange Ways too. That's the answer. He will probably be like a battle engine, I think.
Yeah, that's a interesting selection. There's part of me that kind of would vote for Haley 4 just because I'm always a fan of more Haleys, but yeah.
Isn't she kind of in Warcaster though? Wasn't that at least part of a kind of discussion that maybe one of these Warcasters looks suspiciously much like Haley?
Yeah, maybe. All right, well, we will go ahead and pause there and invite everyone, if you're not yet supporting the Patreon, go ahead and subscribe there, and you can listen to the second half of this conversation. And as always, you can support or buy things from Discount Games Inc. and Muzon Minis, and we will help you be able to play with your items and play with them better. So, Daniel, thank you very much for being on this episode. I definitely appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening to us chat about War Machine. We appreciate it.